Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech. It's a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, May 17th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. Oliver Millman from The Guardian will be joining us shortly, but for now I'm joined by the wonderful Mike Casey of TigerCom. Hello, Mike.
Hi, friend. How are you? Do you know that you kind of let the cat out of the bag last week inadvertently? You told our listeners and viewers that we work from a script. And to be clear, we prepare the script for you. I'm so talented. I can just wing it.
That's right.
So I think that's important for our listeners to know.
That is good to know. And we appreciate our script writers. That's why we're saying that. If you think I can rattle off all these numbers off the top of my head after reading the newspaper in the morning, you're crazy. We put
Claire Quirin on an action plan. She will never again schedule us for an early morning taping because we were super loopy.
Yeah. If you want to send more comments about the loopiness, REW@clarionevents.com. You can recommend our stories of the week and our clean techer of the week, and we'll have that link in the episode description as well. Okay, Mike, get us started.
All right. Trevor Honeycutt and Steve Holland from Reuters write, Biden sharply hikes U.S. tariffs on an array of Chinese imports. John, I feel like we are becoming expert China watchers on this show. We talk about the Chinese role in clean tech so much. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tariff show. That's how Factor This began in the first place. In an effort to create more domestic jobs and prevent China from flooding U.S. markets, President Biden raising tariffs on Chinese exports on Wednesday, impacting $18 billion worth of imported goods. That includes steel, aluminum, semiconductors, EVs, critical minerals, solar cells, and cranes. It's an action that will almost certainly raise the cost of clean tech in the U.S., and it does so directly with a 100% tariff on Chinese EVs and a 50% tariff on Chinese solar cells. It also targets steel, aluminum, and critical minerals, which are important components for wind, solar, batteries, and EVs. And yesterday, the administration went further, ending a tariff exemption for bifacial solar panels and ending a delay on tariffs for solar coming from Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. This is a big one.
Yeah. Biden has struggled to convince voters that his economic policies have been successful, despite the numbers, which indicate low unemployment rates and above-trend economic growth. Trump still has a 7-point lead over President Biden on the economy. I can see two ways that this makes sense from a clean energy transition standpoint. To quote White House advisor Ali Zaidi, supply chain risk is climate risk. There are certain efficiencies to be gained by having one country dominate the manufacture of certain products, but I think what COVID taught us was what I'll call the Dan Sugar lesson, that the cost of supply chain disruption is higher than the cost of making things in more supply chain stable countries. The second is that you have to balance the most effective policy with what's politically enduring. Trump is busy pitching the IRA in exchange for gutting the IRA in exchange for $1 billion in campaign cash. And Biden's team is probably worried that voters will perceive the IRA as a government subsidies for Chinese products, a gift to Beijing. That's not a good look in swing states. John, story number two.
All right. This was a big one this week. Zach Bright from E&E News writing, FERC shakes up power industry with landmark grid rule. Mike, what'd you think?
Yeah. On previous episodes, we've discussed that the slow transmission build-out is one of the top barriers to the clean energy transition. By 2030, the U.S. could lose out on 80% of the pollution reduction potential of the IRA if transmission construction stays at its current snail's pace. So on Monday, federal regulators pressed the accelerator pedal by directing U.S. grid operators to start planning more transmission lines. And the grid planners and transmission owners now must look 20 years ahead to determine the best decision for transmission build-out and upgrades. FERC also passed a separate guideline which allows them to grant permits for power lines when states don't act first. Not surprisingly, the state utility commissioners are not happy about the rules. Their association, NARUC, said they're generally disappointed by the significantly diminished state role. To them, I would say that we have planet on fire, and none of the fossil fuel bros on LinkedIn have seemed to be able to identify a viable planet B. So in the words of Harry Truman, lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. John, what do you think of this piece?
Okay, big deals from FERC this week, but need to acknowledge there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and this doesn't replace the need for transmission reform at the congressional level. So we do still need to keep our eyes on the prize here. Big rulings on long-range planning, as you mentioned. There is some cost-sharing incorporated there and a backstop siting rule that should help ease tension in some of these 10 identified national interest corridors. But we still need to figure out how to get more interregional transmission built. And we haven't figured out cost-sharing for that. So states with opposing policy goals are still going head-to-head, and we got to make sense of all this in order to 2X or 3X the grid, as the DOE thinks we'll need to by 2050. We do have an episode of Factor This coming up on Monday after a long wait between episodes, and we are going to break down every aspect of that FERC ruling. So make sure you tune in. All right, Mike, our third story.
Our third story is from the Washington Post. Josh Dossie and Maxine Joslow, who recently had on the show. What Trump promised oil CEOs as he asked them to steer $1 billion to his campaign. Hat tip to Solar Wake Up and Jan Brandt for including the story in his news roundup. John, what'd you think?
Yeah, so in leaked communications from a private campaign dinner last week, oil executives complained to Trump about the environmental standards they've been facing under Biden. Trump asked them to raise $1 billion for his election campaign, with the promise of reversing dozens of Biden's sustainability policies. The U.S. is producing more oil than any other country ever has, and a second Trump term would likely increase that production with new offshore drilling, quicker permits, and other related regulations, or relaxed regulations, rather, according to the former president. He said on the first day of his second term in office, he would end Biden's freeze on liquefied natural gas exports. Mike.
So influence peddling is the glass of mature industries break when they lose in the marketplace. Here you have a group of wealthy polluters who have never produced more of their product than they are now. They're still man-whining about their plight. And our version of Hugo Chavez responds by offering to relieve this whining for a mere $1 billion in campaign cash. I think this is the type of legalized corruption that blocks policy progress on a range of fronts. We should note that Trump and his administration wiped out over 125 environmental standards over the span of 4 years. One can only imagine more from someone who thinks he knows more about the climate scientists, about the climatology, and has pronounced the whole climate crisis as a hoax. John, what's our fourth story?
This one's from Energy News Network, titled, As Ohio Clamps Down on Clean Energy, Recent Changes Make It Easier to Force Landowners to Allow Oil and Gas Drilling. Mike, what's going on in Ohio?
Oh, boy. Clean techers, if you have listened to us on the show, you are aware of the fossil fuel lobby's $61 million bribery scandal in Ohio. This is the largest utility corruption scandal in the history of the country and is the largest corruption scandal ever in Ohio history, which is saying something. So in the wake of indictments, prison sentences, political embarrassment, and even two suicides, you might have thought that the fracking lobby would have learned to behave itself a little bit better. If you did, you would be wrong. In the you can't make this stuff up category, the fracking lobby in Ohio is not only telling farmers that it cannot put renewable energy on their land effectively to stabilize farm incomes, it now wants to take a step further. It wants to aggressively fine landowners who will not accept fracking rigs on their land. For the fracking lobby, this cute term for this practice is utilization. But the only thing that's utilized here is maxing out the hypocrisy meter in Ohio standards. That's saying something. So either you respect private property rights or you don't. One has to ask, where is Yellowstone's Rip Wheeler when you need him?
Well, John, well, what do you think? Well covered, Mike. I think I'm going to leave all Ohio stories to you, whether it's fraud involving nuclear projects or fracking. We'll cut it there and bring on our guest. Guest this week, Mike, is Oliver Millman of The Guardian, who wrote Magical Thinking, Hopes for Sustainable Jet Fuel, Not Realistic, Report Finds. Oliver, great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
We switched order here in bringing on our guests, so I'll do the Mike Casey line of, if someone hasn't read this story, what do you think is the biggest takeaway?
So essentially, this is a report looking at the promise of sustainable aviation fuels, which have been hyped up by the airline industry. They've been lavished with various subsidies by governments, both here in the US and overseas, as a replacement for jet fuel, which is one of the most kind of polluting, heavily used fuels there is. They're used to power commercial airliners. And essentially, the report finds that this promise is pretty much made on sand. There's no kind of scalable alternative to traditional polluting jet fuel right now. Without huge subsidies, it's going to get nowhere near cutting pollution from aircraft. And essentially, the airline industry is going to miss all of its various climate goals to kind of zero out pollution by 2050 based on current trajectories. It's just nowhere near meeting the promises that have been set for it.
Oliver, one thing I've been struck by over the years hearing about sustainable aviation fuel is the question of how big a deal is aviation in global carbon pollution. What I have heard over and over again is it's heavy industries with big stationary high energy demand facilities like cement and aluminum and steel production. That's really where we ought to be focusing our climate reduction efforts as much as possible. Is that wrong, or is aviation, with its continued growth, becoming more and more of a, is it claiming a bigger share of total global carbon pollution?
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly in the kind of hard to abate bucket, alongside making kind of concrete and steel and so on, that there's not an easy, obvious solution to the current status quo. If you look at the pure numbers, flying accounts for about 2% of global emissions, which doesn't seem a lot. But when you kind of look at it from a kind of equity standpoint, it's the world's wealthy that are predominantly flying. There's many people in the world that would have never set foot on a plane, certainly don't take regular flights. So it's something that the wealthy nations of the world should really be getting a handle on. And it is growing. The numbers of passengers flying increasing each year as there's a kind of more of a kind of middle class and wealthy class kind of establishing themselves in countries like China and India. So this is a problem that's only getting bigger, and yet there's no obvious solution for the problems created by emissions. And then there's the kind of fairness argument. You see people like Kendall Jenner or Taylor Swift or whoever you like to kind of pick on with their private jets, taking kind of 15, 20 minute flights when they could be easily taking a car or maybe, God forbid, public transit. And people get upset about this. It feels like it's an unfair burden on the world that's completely unnecessary at a time when we need to kind of radically reduce emissions and get to net zero.
Last question.
Well, but where would the reality show about the Kardashians be if they were on the bus? That'd
might
be kind
better.
Of interesting, actually.
Yeah, it might be better.
I'd watch it. 100%.
Well, I was starting to say last question. That is not the last question, Oliver. So don't leave us on a Kardashian question from Mike Casey. I do want to unpack the why a little bit more here. So what is the reason this can't scale? Obviously, it's too expensive. But is there a piece or a stage along the way that is causing the biggest issues and the reason we can't make this a more significant piece of the puzzle?
Sure. So there's several barriers. It's the cost is mainly it, the land use. So a lot of these sustainable aviation fuels are made from kind of biomass or corn, ethanol, and that requires, you know, many millions more acres of corn production just to fuel aircraft, which is obviously a big undertaking. Jet fuel, as it is now, it's light, it's very efficient at what it does. There's not an easy substitute for it. Unlike cars, you can put a battery in a car and it doesn't really matter if it makes the car a lot heavier. That's fine. Obviously, if you make a plane a lot heavier, it cannot take off. So there's not really an obvious kind of solution there. Hydrogen has been cited as a potential alternative too, but that is also costly. There's kind of issues around how you produce the hydrogen. Same as sustainable aviation fuels, you might be creating more emissions in creating it than you do in the actual production of it that you're saving. So there are those issues. I did speak to the head of the Center of Sustainable Aviation at the University of Illinois, and I was expecting him to kind of fiercely defend the industry, and he kind of admitted we're in the dark ages of this. The industry just isn't there compared to other industries. He did point out it's harder for the airline industry compared to other industries, but they're late to the game on this, and they're well behind in coming up with any kind of feasible solution.
John, we're about out of time. I think we need to go to our Clean Techer of the Week.
Yeah, that's right. This week's Clean Techer of the Week is Paul Karp, independent climate consultant for his recently launched Carpe Diem Climate Consulting. After spending 2 years at EVgo, Paul is now helping clients in the climate space with business development, go-to-market strategy, strategic partnerships, technology deployment, and more. So congratulations to Paul.
All right. We want to thank our wonderful producer, Brian Mendez, and Claire Quirin and Alex Peterson for gathering these stories and for Claire Quirin not scheduling us in the morning to tape. Thank you, Claire.
Maybe she needs to do that again. I feel like we may have lost that pep in the step that, you know, by nearly the end of the week, it's mid-afternoon, you're getting sleepy.
I'm totally peppy.
All right. All right. I am
so peppy. All right, we're gonna wrap this thing.
Thank you to Oliver Millman for joining us this week on This Week in Clean Tech. Please subscribe, give us feedback, share those story recommendations, and check out Factor This on Monday. All right, Mike, I'll see you next time.
See you, my friend. Take care.
Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.